Welcome to the Trap Shooters United podcast. I am your host and owner, Joe Brumfield. I created this to help share, showcase, and support this amazing sport by talking to shooters, vendors, parents, and companies. Thank you all for listening. Be sure to follow us on Instagram at Trap Shooters United or like us on Facebook.
This episode is fueled by Fiocchi, high-quality ammunition manufactured right in the heart of America with locations in Ozark, Missouri and Little Rock, Arkansas. I choose Fiocchi because it's loaded in the USA and has extremely light recoil while still crushing targets. But you may be thinking to yourself, Joe, why should I believe you? You're just a mediocre weekend shooter. And you know what? Point taken. Even though I am the Event 12 Graf & Sons Class D Doubles Champion, let me find someone with a lot more credibility.
Hey everyone, this is Shelby Skaggs, ATA All-American, Oklahoma Trap Shooting Hall of Fame member. In our sport, being consistent is the key to success. Fiocchi's line of shotgun ammunition is second to none in this regard. Proven by my 772 straight in the singles competition during the 2022 Grand American, experience the Fiocchi difference.
If you're like me, customer service is at the top of the list when it comes to buying anything. Combine that with the lowest prices and highest trade-in values, Michael Gooch with Indiana Gun Club is without question the number one choice for your next gun. With one of the largest new and used inventory selections in the country, Indiana Gun Club will have the right gun for you. If you're looking to buy your first competition gun, upgrade out of your current gun, or just simply wanting to add to your collection, Michael Gooch provides a five-star experience every step of the way. Give Michael a call at 317-502-2675 or send an email to gotgunguy43@yahoo.com. I've personally purchased two guns from Michael, and I guarantee you're going to be treated right. Other sponsors of the podcast include AJ Supplies, Diamond 8 Leather, Harrod Insurance, Shamrock Sporting Arms, and Ezox CLP and Gun Care Solution. Welcome to episode 81 of the Trap Shooters United podcast. My guest today is back for his second appearance, Braden Paxson. Welcome back to the show.
Oh, it's good to be back.
Absolutely. And for those that are unfamiliar with who Braden is and what he's accomplished, please go back and listen to episode 4. This episode, though, I want to kind of pick up where we left off in that episode, if that's all right with you.
Yeah, that's perfectly fine.
Cool. Let's just kick it off with a 2023 season recap.
Yeah, so 2023 was definitely an odd season, an odd year for me. It was more so the season where I was more on my own for funding and kind of lost a little bit of parents' bank account on that one. So I had to decide which shoots I wanted to go to. So practices and stuff like that, I didn't shoot 30,000 registered birds like I used to. To start off this season, I went on a big, giant weight loss journey and never really set my gun up for losing the bunch of weight, or I never really practiced with my new body, I guess, in a sense. Went out to the first competition, had high expectations, and I think I was in the low 80s on singles and handicap, and doubles were even worse. And it humbled me real quick that I needed to figure something out, because this was not going to work. So I had to stop competitions and kind of do more the whole entire first half of 2023 of straight practice. And my first competition really in 2023 wasn't all the way until the Iowa State Shoot.
Yeah, you're supposed to eat your way to AAA, but then when you lose the pounds, you go back to D class.
Yeah, it real quick.
So take us through that kind of setup then. You mentioned you had to change your gun. So what items on your gun did you have to change?
So when I first noticed, let me start out. Normally I shoot around a 95% high pattern, 5%. That's normally what I run on my single barrel. My double barrel is probably 110, negative 10. I shoot a really high pattern to start out with. When I was struggling with everything, after I lost the weight, I decided to go hit the practice board or the patterning board just to see where I'm at. And about 20 yards away, I held straight on the center and probably only 30 BBs hit the board. Otherwise, I was probably 220, negative 120 is what my pattern was actually shooting
at. Oh, wow.
It changed a lot. I had to probably double the height of my cone and cheek piece on my gun just to make up for all the lost fat in my cheek that I lost.
Mm-hmm.
I had to readjust the rib sight on my gun because my entire eyesight of how I was seeing that bird and how, because I like my beads to be a snowman. I like them stacked on top of each other. When I first started out, they were perfectly flush. So I had to basically crank up the little dial on the rib to max height to even get to where I was used to.
Mm-hmm.
And I still was shooting around 140, negative 40. And so I had to basically readjust everything and start over from scratch on how I put the gun on my shoulder, how I put it in my cheek. I had all the knowledge and the mental knowledge behind the sport, but it was like it was middle school self again, where I had no idea how any of the physical aspect was.
Mm-hmm. So how much weight did you end up losing at that point?
I don't know the exact start I started out at, but I believe I was around 250, 255, and I'm down to 200. And so I still want to go down some, but I'm roughly around 50 pounds is what I'm down.
Okay. Yeah, that's a pretty good bit to get adjusted to.
Yeah, and I did all that within, I really hit the books and hit the iron, and I think I lost all that in around a month and a half, 2 months. So I everything completely changed. I had to buy all new clothes. I'm pretty sure my gun, I was like, man, I hope I don't have to go buy a new gun. This thing's not fitting like it's supposed to. Yeah, that was the hardest part, is just relearning everything, even though you know how to do it. Just you're in a completely new body. And that mentally was tough.
Yeah. So it looks like you hit a couple like local registered shoots in June, July, and then the first one, like you said, was Iowa State. You shot decent in Iowa. I mean, not great for you, but I would say above average in comparison to the normal shooter. How did everything go there?
Iowa went well to my standard. At that point, I think I was either a B or an A class average shooter of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was kind of a struggle walking into the competition and seeing everyone at Iowa knows me inside their registration buildings. And they're like, oh, we'll just put you in AAA, 27 AAA. I'm like, well, over my last 1,000 targets, I'm barely pushing a 92 average right now. And they're like, oh, so just being able to have that struggle,
mm-hmm,
of, okay, I know I can shoot really great scores, but I'm in a downhill spiral right now. I'm barely struggling to break in the nines. That mentally was tough. And then anytime somebody would walk up and ask you how I'd shot, I think one of the first couple days at Iowa, I shot a 96 on singles, which is a great score. I'll still take a 96 any day of the week. I was super happy with it because I believe it was my highest of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And the amount of people that were saying, oh, wow, that's a horrible score. That's really bad for you. And it's like, yes, it is bad for what I can do, but with how I'm doing now, I'm super excited with that score. So it's just trying to mentally reassure myself and reassure everyone that just because it may not be a great score to someone else, it's a good score for me at that time.
Yeah. I mean, when you go from averaging like, for the last 3 or 4 years, your averages have been like 98 and a half and above. And then when you do hit kind of a slump or some changes and you go down, you know, to break 94s, 95s, 96s in singles, it's like, yeah, that's not a good score for you, but like, you're not helping my mental aspect by coming up to me and saying, oh, that's not a good score. It's like, build me up a little bit here.
Yeah, exactly. Like I couldn't tell you the last time I dropped below a 97 on singles. And then once I hit Iowa, if I shot a 95, I was ecstatic because that was oh man, that's the greatest score I've put up all year round.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, it's just, it's, it was a hard aspect to grasp and just to relearn basically.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that I went through that process, because it allowed me to strengthen my mental mindset and to help like other people out. And if they're down on shooting a 93 or a 95 and they're used to 97s, 98s or whatever, it's like, it's part of the process. You can't be on top all the time.
Yeah.
It's a roller coaster. You're going to have your ups, you're going to have your downs. You just got to strengthen your mind to pick yourself back up.
Yeah. Sometimes it's actually good to be humbled a little bit, because then you know what kind of work it takes to get back to that level that where you were at. So it's kind of good and bad. Good because you can, you know what to fix, and you can kind of put little goals to achieve those. Bad because you obviously don't want to be in that position, but it all evens out at the end.
Yes. Yeah, it's all part of the process. Like I've told everyone, it's gonna be all right with time. Like time fixes everything. It may not be a day, it may not be a month, but eventually things will start clicking for you and things will start getting better. So it's like, it helped me a lot, because I like to help the youth out. I help a lot of the local high school teams and middle school teams around in Iowa. And so my biggest thing I always tell the kids and stuff is always look for positives. No matter if you shot your worst score you've ever shot in your entire life, always try to find at least one positive. And it seemed like for me, I lost what that was like, or lost how it felt to experience, it's going to sound super selfish, but to experience a bad score or a bad round. And then I wasn't able to fully relate to my old self when I first started out. And then this happened, I lost all the weight. And then I was back to early high school years where I was still struggling, still barely breaking in the nines. And it's like, that allowed me to better see through the eyes of the people I'm helping coach of, okay, mm-hmm. It really is important to focus on the positives, because it mentally drains you when you go from shooting hundreds to worst case, 99 throughout months of shooting to barely shooting in the nines. It takes a toll on you. And if you only focus on the bad things, it will destroy you. And I've seen it happen to people, unfortunately, especially in high school age, when they start bumping out constant 25, 24s on boxes, and then they have a couple bad days and it absolutely ruins them, or it ruins the rest of their competition.
Yep.
So being able to go through that, I'm grateful for going through that, I guess.
Yeah, I think on the episode we did, about a year and a half or whatever, you mentioned like, okay, well, if you break people get down on themselves on singles if they break like a 94 or whatever. It's like, spin it to the positive. And I think you mentioned like, okay, well, you did 94 things right today.
Yeah.
Then you build on that for the next round.
Yep. Instead of focusing on, oh man, these six birds, I did horrible on six birds. Okay, maybe if that was, you shot only eight targets and you missed six of them, I can see your point, but you shot 100 birds and you broke 94 of them in this case. It's like, that's fantastic. You broke 94% of the targets out there and you just slipped up 6% of the times.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when I'm talking to college, high school, or middle schoolers, I tell them think of it as a grade.
Yeah.
Like if I went to a test and I got a 94% on a test, that's an A. I only missed 6%. I'm going to be thrilled, especially if I didn't put a whole lot of practice, or if I only put in one half hour time slot of practice into that test, it translates over in the shooting. If you only practice for a half an hour a week on trap and you shot a 94, you still got a 94 with very little practice. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's still a great score. You have to think of it in the positives, because the negatives will outweigh the positives if you let them.
And, I mean, you know this, like if you break a 94, the very next day you could very well run 100. Like it's
oh,
not
yeah, it's
the margin is very slim to stepping up to that next kind of level?
In every discipline, I've shot skeet, sporting clays, bunker, trap, handicap, doubles. I've had some of my worst scores ever, and then I'll immediately turn around and I'll put up personal best. And it's like, all it takes is the flip of a switch. Your downs never last forever. They're only going to happen for a short set amount of time before things start clicking in, before anything happens. I think my first time I ever shot 100 in handicap, I think the day before I had an 84, woke up that morning, shot a practice round, and I think I maybe hit 13, 14 of the birds in practice.
Oh my God.
And walked off and I said, you know what? I think I figured it out. And then smashed 100. And it's like, and then the next day I was back in the 80s. So anything can happen. Like never give up on yourself, because you never know when it's going to be your time to shine.
Yeah.
It's almost like with your doubles last year, you walked into the grand on doubles and just absolutely cleaned house on doubles at the grand with me.
Man, those last 30 targets, I was just trying to survive.
I don't even remember what I shot or what anyone else on that squad shot. All I remember is just thinking about, okay, don't mess up for Joe. Don't mess up for Joe. Set a good example. Don't mess up for him.
Wonder what day that was. That was one of the first, I think you broke a 93. I think I beat you that. Did I beat you that day?
I think you were pretty close to it.
You might have had a 93. I'm looking at a 93 here in doubles.
It very well could have been that day. Because
I got a 95. And I think I said that was probably the one and only time I'll ever beat you at the grand in doubles.
No, that was a fun day. Being able to shoot with you and watching you crush your personal best and win a trophy at the Grand American of all shoots, too.
Yeah, don't get my head too big here. I mean, I am kind of a world's champ class D shooter, so you know, no big deal.
Hey, that's something I won't have. That's something I can't say I am. So you got me on that one.
In between the Iowa State shoot and the Grand, did you get any practice rounds in?
Usually, I spend that entire week. I take that entire week off of work and everything, and I just live and breathe at the range trying to dial out everything for the grand. Last year I had a internship with my work, so I was barely able to get a week off for Iowa and a week for the grand. So as soon as Iowa got done, I spent the next 2 weeks, I think, because I didn't shoot the prelim at grand. I only shot the grand week. I spent those next 2 weeks working till basically sundown. And so I spent a lot of my time practicing on the Oculus through their app that I have through the Oculus.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, I didn't get a whole lot of real practice in. I think I got off of work on a Friday, left at around 5 or 6, showed up to Illinois at the Grand around 1 a.m., got a couple hours of sleep and woke up and started competing the next day out at the Grand.
Yeah. So it's about a 6 or 7 hour drive for you?
Yeah, it's a 6.5, a solid 6.5. St. Louis traffic, that can make or break the trip. That can either be a 6.5 or it can be an 8 hour, depending on how St. Louis traffic crashes or anything like that.
So how was it going into the Grand then? You started off a little slow, and then you quickly just kind of made a J curve.
Yeah, so usually when I go into the Grand, I'm usually at the hottest point of my season, because I normally compete the best during Iowa, and then I carry it over into the Grand. That's normally the time of the season when I kick things into all overdrive and I'm performing on all cylinders. Coming into this, 2023's Grand, I was not prepared for it at all. I didn't shoot any really scores that I wanted to in Iowa. I had some good scores, but I just didn't perform to the way I'm used to performing at Iowa. So I didn't have a big confidence boost that I was going to do the greatest or I was going to perform well at the grand. I was more excited about who I was going to shoot with instead of what I was going to shoot. So starting out, the scores, I don't exactly remember what my score started out as. I know I didn't run any hundreds until the championship day for singles. That was my first 100 of the entire year, and I managed to run both of them that day.
Yep, back to back.
Yeah, going into the grand, I wasn't ready. I'll just put it plain and simple. I didn't practice. I showed up super early in the morning, got up super early that day to go register, and I was just out on the line. When I was done shooting, I'd go back to the camper and I'd log in some hours at work. I wasn't in the mental mindset for shooting, and that wasn't until about halfway through then I really kicked into the shooting mindset of, okay, I'm here. I need to actually act like I'm here. I need to mentally tell myself I'm here.
Yeah. So how was that 200 then? I mean, you've ran several 200s. I don't know how many, but I know it's multiple. How was that 200 then in the single and the clay target? One, because obviously it's the biggest singles event of the year. And two, you hadn't been shooting that much or up to that standard kind of, you know, for the past couple of weeks or months or whatever. So what was kind of going through your mind then after the finishing up the first 100 and then finishing up that second 100?
Not going to lie, that was the most nervous I've been in my entire life. Not only because it wasn't the world's biggest singles event of the entire year, but it, like you said, it was also my first 100 of the entire season. So I think after the third box on the first 100, I ran 75 of 75. I walked off and a good buddy of mine, JT Osborne, he was like, nice job, man, stay strong. And I was trying to drink water and I was spilling water all over myself. I thought I was going to pass out. I was never so nervous in my entire life. Go out to that last box.
Let me back up real quick. You've ran 300s from the 27, and one of those being at the grand, and you're nervous about running 100 straight in singles.
Yes. I'll put it flat out. That 100, I would rather go run 100 from the fence, because my nerves were more calm then than it was on the singles. It was just so much hard work and so much mental strain was put onto me last year because of the big weight loss, that even being close to running 100, it had my mind and my heart rate going 100 miles an hour, full force. I will never forget JT's face. He was looking at me and you would have thought he saw a ghost. He went white when I was shaking so bad I couldn't even hardly drink water. Just thought, this wasn't even the second 100. This was still the first 100.
Yeah.
But when I did manage to shoot the first 100, it was just a sense of awe that, okay, I know I can still do this. I just did it. It feels good. Because I was starting at that point, I was doubting if I'd ever run 100 ever again.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that's very dramatic, but it's what the mind tells you when you're in such a bad funk that, well, your glory days are over. You'll never be back to what you were used to being at. So being able to run that first 100 was, it took so much weight, so much pressure off of me. I didn't care if I shot a 50 on the second 100. I was more excited that I ran the first 100. And then I rode that high throughout the entire day. Going into the second round of singles that day, I had a lot more confidence. I was back to my old self where I knew I can do this. I just did it. Let's go do it again. And so that second 100, I was stone cold. No emotions. I was so ready for that one. Bust out the 200. Everyone was so excited. And I was like, oh, it's okay. It is what it is. I did the 100. That's what I really cared about. And it didn't really hit me that I ran the 200 until it was 11 o'clock at night and I was getting called on to the line for a shootout. And then
that's when you finally got called.
80, oh man, there were so many 200s this year. It was ridiculous.
I want to say there was 80 it felt something. Like there was,
yeah, like it felt like there was 80 of us walking out on the line, taking on up almost the entire west end of the range. Oh, even though I missed one right out the gate on the first box, I still cleaned the rest for a 49, but I was still so proud of how I started out that year to how I finished out.
Yeah.
Especially being, this is my last singles event of ATA of the year, and I finished out on a strong, I finished out on the high note. Like that to me helped a lot. And then it carried over into college for college season.
Yeah. You smacked, you ended up with a 97 in the Grand American Handicap.
I did. And I believe they were all, if I remember correctly, I think I missed the first bird out of the house. Ran, I think, 71, 72 straight, and then missed two on, I think, my last post or some ridiculous. Like they, I could have had such a, I had an amazing score, but it could have been even better with just losing out two posts. Yeah.
Now, what did you, what trophies did you walk away with? I know you got a couple, right?
Yeah, one of them's controversial. I know in the ATA world, I think I won like the B class overall champion because I walked into the grand to register and my average, I believe, for singles was B class.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people were throwing a fit that I was not in AAA or AA at least, and that I was in B class. But all the way up to then, my averages were B class. So I should have been in B class. Mm-hmm. And it clicked halfway through it. And so I think I got one of the 1,000 target high overall B class winners. I think I got junior gold handicap on that last. And then I didn't get anything for the 200 in the championship singles. But I believe I walked away with three trophies, I want to say.
Yeah. Isn't that a kick in the butt when you run 200 and don't end up getting anything?
I think 12th in junior gold with the 200. And it's like, man, this is rough, but it's the nature of the beast.
Yep. So after the grand, obviously we're kind of rolling in to your senior year of college. So take us through your senior year. You're finishing up now, obviously, but how's your senior year been?
So the senior year's been fantastic. We ended off absolutely incredible, and then we won a couple national titles, which I can talk about later. But coming into my senior year, I was more concerned and more worried about just having fun, enjoying it, because the first 3 years of college, I was all about getting a national title, getting a ring, just competing. That was it. So I never really enjoyed the full college experience, I guess, in a sense. I always just made sure I was in competition mode 24/7. So coming into this year, I still wanted the same goals of a national title and stuff like that, but I wanted to experience more of what other things go on. So we had, I think, 7 returners on the team,
mm-hmm.
and 13 freshmen incoming.
Oh, wow.
In on the team. So we were heavily outweighed. So we were a fairly young team. So the three seniors, me, Riley, and Wyatt, we all kind of had to step up and take charge of the entire team and show the majority younger people what to expect, kind of what mental mindset we are, how we treat each other as a family and stuff like that. So the first month or so was a little rough. I was getting a little worried, but we got the team all clicked together. Everyone loved each other. We still are all a big family, even though our season's done. We still hang out all the time. Every week we'll still go to dinners or go to each other's rooms and stuff and have poker nights, play cards. We like our Texas Hold'em. We play a lot of Texas Hold'em on our fun times. Started out in the season, had a couple first competitions, and we were kicking butt. Our coach's goal has always been on singles to get five nines. He wants five people to be in the 90s. Coming off a team last year where we had 10 people going to 20 people this year, his goal bumped up to he wants us to all be four 90s. So he wants five nines.
So you only had 10 people last year?
Yes, I believe so. Like 10 to 12. That's usually about the average size of what we've been.
Really?
Yeah, we've been a fairly small team throughout as far as I can remember. And this year we blew up with the amount of recruits. We ended up having to turn some people away because we were maxed out at 20.
Yeah.
So we had 20. We're losing three of us this year, and we're gaining, I think, six next year. Because just like any team, you'll have some people drop out at semesters, or you have some people where college just isn't built for them, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's part of the game. You know, every team goes through those issues, but we're going to be maxed out at 20 again next year for the new season to come out. But yeah, it's been a fun journey being able to watch everybody come in kind of new and then building them up throughout the semester. Our coach really pushed that he wants us to shoot a 490 or higher, so 598s, like I was saying, or higher. And we had the shooters that can do it. We have some star-studded shooters on our team, and we still do after the seniors leave. It was more so getting all of us to do it at the same exact time. Mm-hmm. Is what our big mental push throughout this entire year has been, as we've been working on building ourselves mentally that we need to help all of us up. So even if one person drops three or four birds, your next person in line can pick up those extra birds that you missed above the 98.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of been the entire strive this year for the team. And that's something that we've never done before, just because we've never had them out of numbers that we've had. This year, we doubled the size of the team, and it sounds like it's going to stay like that for good, which I love. I love seeing the sport and youth and colleges and high schools continue to grow each and every year. I think that's fantastic. We finished the first semester off at, I believe it was state. And I think don't quote me on this, but I think we took second or third in the state of Iowa. We made some mental mistakes, but we performed the best that we did to the semester. So we were thrilled. We were excited to get ready to do a bunch of indoor practicings on a virtual headset on our simulators. We were so excited to go in, get all of that out, get just absolutely 100% ready for Texas. Second semester rolls around, we get ready for Texas, and our squad, we were so determined. There was nothing going to stop us except us. It was one of those senses that we were so mentally strengthened and mentally prepared that the only way a team was going to beat us is if we beat ourselves by mentally slipping up. So we went down to Texas, and we had beautiful weather in Texas. It was nice, cloudy. It wasn't hot. It was 70s. In full clouds, so it was just a perfect it drizzled the entire day one of the days, so it was
for singles,
it
right?
It wasn't enough to put on rain gear, but it was enough that you were going to notice it after a while. But we started out split up. So in my squad, we started out shooting skeet the first day. Walking in the skeet, I have maybe shot two or three 99s prior to the skeet. I was on the cusp of busting a perfect score out on skeet. Walked out. I knew it's my last year. This is my last time ever shooting a skeet event for college. This is it. I need to throw all of my cards on the table right now. This is all or nothing. I still don't know how I did it, but I managed to bust out a perfect 100 on skeet. And being able to do that at my last competition ever for college in front of my entire team, in front of my dad, in front of coach, that was so surreal. I'm still speechless even trying to talk about running my first ever skeet event at Nationals and being able to
in ski, which target is like the target everyone like fears?
Oh, so it's different for a lot of people. So in ski, they have what they typically call gimme targets or birds that that everyone should have. That's stations 1, 2, which are just the first two, 6 and 7, which are the same targets, but on the other side of the house, and then 8, the one in the middle. Those are technically the easiest birds to hit. So they should always be the easiest birds. Ironically, those are the ones I always miss. If I
now 8, is that the one that's like in the middle where you shoot like real close up?
Yes, 8's the one where you're standing in the middle and then you shoot the high house and you're pointing your gun straight up in the air basically.
Okay.
And then you shoot it again, but you turn around and do low house. And then it's the same thing. Stations 1 and 2 have been killing me a lot this year for whatever reason. So coming into Nationals, I knew that if I could get off of 1 and 2, I was fine.
Mm-hmm.
It was just that station 1 and station 2 that killed me every single time. That's about half of our team struggles on those stations, and probably the other half of our shooters struggle on 3, 4, and 5. And that's just because you're standing straight out and that bird's a true 45 or 95 degree angle right across from your body. It's a harder angled target, whereas 1, 2, and those ones are more of trap birds. They're just coming from over your head instead of out in front of you, if that makes sense.
So in skeet for you, because I know you're a full and extra full choke guy. So what chokes are you using in skeet?
I'm getting all the help I can possibly get. I am running full skeets. I am running skeets. I am going to take as much help as I possibly can get on skeet. And it seems like that's the only discipline that I shoot super open chokes. During practicing and stuff, I'll tighten up the foals or improve mods on ski. But when I'm competing, I'm shooting nothing but skeets.
See, that surprises me.
It surprises me too, but I don't complain with it. Skeet's one of those ones where if there's a 3 mile an hour or 5 mile an hour wind, that will massively affect those birds. I don't know why, but skeet, you can have targets. We like to say on Simpson, they're dragons. They'll come out and they'll start snaking up and down like a dragon flying through the air, and it'll be 5 mile an hour winds. Whereas on trap, you can't. Those birds are pretty much solid until you get to 15, 20 mile an hour winds. Those birds are pretty much, and I honestly don't know why that causes it. I don't know if it's the angle because they're throwing down instead of up. But because of that, a lot of people, it seems like, usually tend to stick with skeets or will maybe go in a cylinder for the second shot for the farther one out. But those birds can change 5 feet in height every time you call pull.
Oh, wow. So you got the 100 there. Did you have to shoot off for skeet?
Yes. So the way they did theirs is ACUI had competition Monday through Friday. So everybody shot Monday through Friday. And then if you were in a shoot off, you came back Saturday. And then you all shot off on Saturday. So I shot the 100 on skeet. We didn't start shooting until we shot Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday is the days we shot. No, sorry. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So we didn't compete until we flew in Tuesday. We started competing on Wednesday. I shot my 100 on ski on Wednesday. Thursday was trap. I managed to shoot 100 on trap, and that was the day it was raining on us. Managed to shoot 100 on trap, and then sporting clays for us was Friday. I shot an 88 on sporting clays, which I'm happy with. I'll take an 88 any day of the week on sporting clays. then they didn't post any of the shoot-offs or any of the scores until midnight, Friday night, to find out that I had to get up at 6 a.m. on Saturday to go to the range to get ready for shoot-offs. That kind of sucked, but it's the nature of the beast. You kind of have to sit and wait until they post scores. But Saturday, it was on Ski. It was me and one other shooter from Lindenwood in my division. I think I was B class average on Ski. And there were 13 double. The highest classes they have in trap is double A. And so there were 13 double A hundreds in the male side. I had a shoot off against those 13 on Saturday as well. And then our team tied for third place doubles trap. So we all had to shoot, the whole squad had to shoot doubles trap. I was a part of that as well on Saturday. And then this year they started this new national trophy called the combined singles. And it's your, they combine your trap score with your skeet score. And whoever has the highest, they only give away the national title spot. Whoever has the highest won it. Well, I ran 100 in both, so I had a 200 out of 200. And then a really good shooter and a really cool dude all around, Adam McNutt from Alabama, he shot a 200 out of 200 as well. I think there was 833 or 830 males that competed for this trophy, and we were the only two. We were the only two that shot a perfect 200. So we had to go back out. This was my fourth shootout of the day. I had to go back out and we had to compete for that. So we started off that Saturday and started off shooting double skeet, because all skeet shootoffs are double skeet. So you do stations 3, 4, and 5, but you shoot a pair instead of just singles. They do it so it goes fast. I don't like it.
Because, I mean, you're shooting off in a in an event that you didn't even shoot to qualify for. Like, you shot single skeet.
It's basically going and shooting trap and then shooting your shoot-offs in five stands.
Yeah.
It's like, this, okay, it doesn't make sense, but I don't make the rules. I just got to follow them, yeah. I guess. But yeah, so we started the day off on doubles trap, and doubles trap is not my game. I think I dropped the fourth bird or something.
Or double
and
ski.
It was a miss.
You started on double
ski. Yeah, on double ski.
Okay.
So I hit the first pair on station 3. We walked to station 4. I hit the first bird, and I was just behind that second bird. And then the Lindenwood guy, I think his name was Samuel or something, he ended up hitting all four. And so it was kind of a downer to start the day out losing a national title right out at 8 in the morning, losing the national title. Kind of, that one kind of hurt the soul a little bit, but I was still glad to be there for it being my first time ever.
Yeah.
Really in a skeet shoot-off. We sat around for probably 2 hours. They got all of skeets done, then they called out trap. So I had to go out along with 12 other people, and we were split on 3 fields. I brought an entire case up thinking this shootout, like an ATA, is going to go at least 250.
Mm-hmm.
We walk up, shoot the first box. Me and Adam, we both run a 25 on our field. We get done, we walk back, grab some ammo. The referee is like, all right, everybody onto this field. We all walk over. After the first box, after 25, we went from 13 down to 5.
Wow.
And I was like, wow, this is, I'm not necessarily used to this. I'm used to ATA where you have to go 100 to even lose usually your first person.
Mm-hmm.
We shoot the second box. I run a 25 the second box. We walk off. After the second box, it's down the 2. Me and one other guy after just running 50.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was a shock. And at that point, I wasn't necessarily nervous at that point. I was more nervous beforehand because at least now being top 2, I'm getting something at least.
Yeah.
I'm going to have at least some trophy instead of, oh, man, I got 13th place or I got 12th place or whatever. We managed to go back out again. We both ran the third box. And walking out for the fourth box, the other, I don't remember his name. I know he's from Trinity. super nice dude. I mean, we were talking as they were refilling the trap houses and stuff. And he was the coolest dude around. He dropped one, I think, on his first or second post right out the gate on the fourth box. And all I had to do was clean the rest of the targets up. And I ended up doing that and winning my third trap national title in college, which that's just outstanding in that sense of its own. Like, I'm so proud of knowing that trap's probably the hardest one, just because you have to be, you can't mess up.
You'll be perfect, basically.
Yeah, the game of trap is to not be the first one to miss. Mm-hmm. That's really like, you just have to not make the first mistake. Whoever makes the first mistake is usually, in most cases, going to losing the shoot-off. And so being able to repeat that again was fantastic. I couldn't be more proud of that.
And that would have been your sixth overall for national titles?
Yes, that was that. The trap title was my sixth national title. And then we waited a couple hours. The team went out to go shoot our doubles trap shootout. We ended up, they only had us shoot one pair at each station. So we, which was really weird. So we shot a pair on each station, and then it was, I think, 50, if my math is right. I think we shot 50 as a squad, and then that was, then we'd wait to see what the next squad did, basically. And we ended up winning the bronze trophy and doubles trap. And shortly after that, I got called out for the last and fourth time for the combined singles event with me and Adam. This shootout was way messed up. They had to shoot trap, double ski, then back to trap. But trap was only 5 shots. So we both walk out with a whole box, and they're like, all right, take one shot at each station and then move.
Oh, my God.
They're like, what? One? He's like, yeah, shoot one.
Up as they go.
Yeah, so we both went 5 out of 5 in the shoot-off. And he's like, all right, now it's time to go to ski. And it's like, wow, this, I could have told you we both would have shot a 5. We both just were in the shootout with 100 straights on trial. Whatever it is, what it is. So we had to go, went to go shoot double ski. I ended up missing one in the double ski, and I believe Adam missed 2 in the ski double ski shoot-off. And then they made us go back out to shoot another, just 5 shells of trap.
Mm-hmm.
And we both cleaned the 5 shells. Winning that one, that was my 7th national title.
Mm-hmm.
And then once everything was all done, we found out as a team that we won the CAA, which is ACOI's classic all around. I believe that's what they call it. It's basically HOA in trap. It's your singles, your skeet, and your sporting clays combined. Those 300 combined, and that's the team score. We were the highest CAA team in Division 3. So the team itself won a national title. So that ended up being my 8th title, because I have 3 team titles and 5 individual.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 3 team titles and 5 individual titles. And so being able to see such a young team get our goal, there's nothing I could ask more for my teammates, for it being my last year. And I couldn't have walked out any better than what I did.
Yeah, that seeing him miss 2 on double ski was probably a big sigh of relief for you.
Oh, it really was. Because Adam, his game is skeet.
Mm-hmm.
He's a skeet shooter. I'm a trap shooter. So I told myself, I'm like, man, I'm really going to hope he misses on trap, because I'm probably going to miss on skeet.
Yeah.
And I'm really going to have to clean the trap out, because that's probably ending up going to be the only chance I get. And the 2 birds he had dove probably 5 feet. As soon as he called the bird, they took an absolute dive bomb in the dirt. But there's nothing you can really do about those. Everybody gets the short end of the stick in those certain situations.
So you finished up with your shooting year of school. How much How much longer do you have as far as your school year, though? When's your last day of school?
We have 2.5 weeks.
Oh, that's it?
Yeah. So next week, our school is weird. They give us, well, we get Monday off because it's they call it Easter recess, meaning the day after Easter. We also get Wednesday off because Simpson does a campus day where all the teams and all the clubs and stuff get together and they do basically a community service day where we'll go to different businesses, do different things. We'll do whatever if they need the outside of their building wash, we'll wash their buildings. If they just need their grounds cleaned up, we'll do stuff like that. So we get 2 of the days off next week for the first week in April. And then April 18th is our last day of regular class, which is a Thursday. And that's exactly 3 weeks from today.
So, and what's your degree in?
My degree, I'm studying in computer science and minoring in computer information systems.
Okay. So what's the plan then after graduation?
So I'm blessed and thankful that I had my internship last summer. I was talking about earlier, I worked at a company called the Waldinger Corporation, and I worked in their corporate side and their IT side, basically taking raw data. Every time they send a service technician out to a site, they give the clients a survey to fill out. All that information that we get back from the client, I take all of that data in Excel and I make it look nice and pretty. And I'll show the CEO and the different branch managers and stuff like that. I'll change the data so they can see it in ways that they can understand what they're looking at, basically.
Do you use Tableau or something else?
Yeah, we use Oracle for our database. That's where we store everything. And then we use Tableau so much.
Yeah, Tableau's cool.
I love Tableau. I'm doing my senior project in school in Tableau as well. So I love that app, and it's super user-friendly as well. But I did the internship. I was able to perform well enough that they extended the internship through the school year. So I've been working with them throughout the entire school year as well, working the internship. And it was in November, they offered me a full-time job for whenever. I could start it then or I could start it when I graduated.
Mm-hmm.
So I started it right away. So I've been working full-time
since. That money coming in.
Oh, yeah. It's the paychecks are nice, that's for sure. I've been working full-time since, I think, January 5th or something. Been working full-time, work 40 hours a week, worrying about school, doing all my homework in school, and competing in athletics. So in that way, the moment I graduate, I already have the job. I don't have to transition into anything different. I'm already there. So I'm incredibly blessed and thankful for that opportunity. I know a lot of seniors are all hitting the panic button, trying to figure out what they're going to do, what kind of jobs, if their degree's even going to be used in jobs or whatever. So I'm incredibly thankful for the position that I was able to be put in.
So are you going to be working remote, or do you have to be in the office on certain days, or how's that work for you?
So being in IT, they are super flexible with my position. So right now, I don't go in the office at all right now because of school. And they said during the summer, they said they would like to see me there in the office once a week. Otherwise, I can work from home 4 days a week. My hours, I can work whatever time of the day I want to work. I just got to hit the 40 hours a week. I've talked to them about shooting and stuff, like, hey, I'm an avid trap shooter. I love to travel around the country. Is it all right, like, if I disappear for a week, go to shoots, and then disappear for an hour, 2 hours a day while I shoot, and then work together? He's like, my boss looked at me and he goes, you can move to Alaska and you can still work here. He's like, as long as you do your stuff and work your hours, we leave you alone.
Yeah.
And so I think that's the same way with a lot of IT. field, it seems like, whereas most IT people have the flexibility to kind of work really anywhere at any time. So being able to have a position like that for work and continue to still shoot on my own is, I can't ask for any better through the job line.
And make money while you're at the shoot. You know, you're still working while you're at the shoot.
Yeah, like I'll go out, like what I did with the Grand last year. I'll go out, I'll shoot, and then when I'm done shooting, I'll just go back to my camper and I'll just get back on my computer and just work.
Yeah.
And that way I can do the best of both worlds. Or there's also, I can do PTO. I can still take time off. Like, I'm going to try to end up taking the Grand every single year off so I can just worry about the Grand and the Grand alone. But having the flexibility that if I can't take the Grand off, I can still go to the Grand, compete, and stuff like that.
Or even if it's, do you have set PTO hours, or is it like unlimited, even though they say it's unlimited, but it's not really unlimited?
It's a mix of both. So I think for working 0 to 2 years, you get 3 weeks of PTO, and you can carry 40 hours over at the end of the year.
5 days.
So during my entire internship, I was technically part-time, but when I switched to full-time, they tracked my starting date was in May from when my internship started. So it was, I think, December 1st, I looked at my account and I had 80 hours of PTO built up. And I asked my boss, I'm like, what is this? I just started full-time. Why do I have this? He's like, oh, no, they messed up on their part. So go ahead, take 2 weeks off. We'll see you at the new year. I was like, okay, I guess I'll see you on the new year.
I want to work. I want to work for him.
Yeah, I was like, they messed us up. They have me showing that I started in May. And he's like, ah, that's a them problem. He's like, just take it off. I'm like, oh, go ahead. I'm not going to say no.
Yeah.
But no, I get the 3 weeks of PTO from day one. So the moment it hit January 1st, I had 150 hours in my account. I didn't have to work a month to earn 2 hours or whatever. They just dumped it all in and then I can use it whenever I want. They have a program that's, I don't know if this is universal throughout all companies, but you can buy PTO hours if you run out. This is my first really full-time job, so I don't know if other companies do it as well. But let's say if I ran out of my hours of PTO this year, I could then buy PTO hours and then use them throughout the year if I wanted to.
I don't think you're going to run out of 3 weeks. That's a lot of time.
And I don't really ever have to worry about sick days or anything because I can just work remote. I can still log in at my computer from home.
Yep.
If I can't make it in the office, or I don't have to worry about bad weather if I can't drive into, being in Iowa in the Midwest and winter times, if we get a real bad ice storm or something, I can just stay home and stuff. I don't have to take a day off at work or anything like that.
Or even if you wanted to go shoot, you don't have to shoot the high overall. You could just come in like, do a Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, or Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Yeah.
And only take 1 or 2 days off work. Still, be there for 3 or 4 days of the shoot.
Yeah. And I think after every 2 years, you get like an extra week or something like that. But that's pretty much how every company is. The longer you're there, the more PTO you gain. Yeah.
No, that's cool. So with that being said, what is your schedule looking like for this new 2024 target year?
So originally I wanted to hit Wisconsin, Ohio, Iowa, and the Grand. But then a nice lovely thing called a house came into my bill, and that took all of my money. I'm for sure hitting Iowa, and I'm for sure hitting the prelim and Grand week. So there's 3 weeks for sure. I would still like to try to make it to Wisconsin since it is fairly close. But that's all just going to depend on how much I have in my shooting account.
Yeah. So tell us about the house. You're moving into it soon.
Yeah, so I actually move into it on Tuesday, April 2nd. I get the keys for it, be moving in. It's a brand new construction townhouse, and I think the average age for all the people there is 52.
Perfect.
So I'm going to be probably the hated neighbor being young and whatnot, but it's off into a new construction site of Indianola, our town. It's a really nice neighborhood. I honestly think I'm going to love it. It's a two-bed, two-and-a-half-bath. It's a two-car garage, attached garage, and it's under an HOA, so I don't have to cover really any insurance on the outside. So if we get a big hailstorm or tornado, high winds or anything, and shingles get ripped off or siding gets ripped off, that's all on them. I basically just cover everything on the inside of the house. Yeah. So that's,
you're paying the HOA fee. That covers, that's basically your insurance.
Yep. I have to have the insurance basically for the inside. They cover everything on the outside, which is really nice. Being a first time.
And they got to mow for you too? Do you have to mow or anything? Or
no, I don't have to mow. They have all mowing covered, all shoveling. The only snow shoveling I'd have to do is if we get a dusting or whatever after they already showed up, then I can do a little path to my car, but my car will be inside my garage. So it's pretty much perfect. Everything on the main floor is like the kitchen, the living area, stuff like that. And there's a half bath. So if I have friends or anybody come over, nobody's got to go upstairs. It's all hardwood on the main floor. And then if you go upstairs, that's where all the laundries, the two bedrooms and the laundry room are all upstairs.
Yeah, that's cool. That'll be fun. So how far is it from your house where you're at now?
So probably a solid 12, 15 minutes, depending on how many traffic lights you hit in town. We're going from the country on one side of the town to pretty dang close to the country city limits on the other side, diagonal side of town. So it's not super close, but it's not far.
Far enough away to where people aren't going to just randomly come knock on your door unannounced or something.
No, it's far enough away, but it's also close enough that if I do need something, I can still...
If you get hungry, you can still go home and eat.
Exactly. The only thing that I am going to be kind of smooshing off of is my fridge was more than what I was expecting, so I didn't have enough to buy a washer and a dryer right off the bat. So I will probably be driving back and home every week to do laundry at my mom's house, do laundry there, borrow her washer and dryer. But
well, while you're doing laundry, you might as well eat.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what. Just I'll make the whole day out of it. Get some free food. Do my laundry.
So does mom and dad have any plans for your room that's going to be empty?
Oh yeah, it's going to be my brother's room. Oh,
okay.
He's brought out tape measures. He's measured this room. He's got pieces of paper. He's drawn out exactly where everything in his room's going to go. Granted, this has been probably a year ago he started doing this. And he's been improving. He's ridiculous. But yeah, my room's going to turn into his room. And then his room is going to be, I think, my mom's office. I think she's going to move her office because she's a hybrid worker as well. So she's in office and then works from home as well. I think that's the plan. They've already bought like all the paint to paint the walls. I just have a nice plain gray wall with a bunch of Iowa Hawkeye logos everywhere. And my brother's like, no, that's boring. I think he's doing like green or some weird wild color.
So let's talk about your weight loss journey then. What did you do and what are you doing now as far as maintaining your weight?
Yeah, so...
And what did you change? You know, what did you change as far as eating habits and exercise and all that stuff?
So my biggest thing I changed right off the bat was eating habits. I still eat unhealthy every once in a while. I'm a food guy. I love food. So giving up like burgers or giving up a steak or giving up food like that, ice cream, it's just not possible. I've tried it before and it lasts maybe a week. And then this time around, I wanted to do something that I could stick to, something that I could make a life out of, that I can do basically forever. So I just cut back on everything I eat. Instead of eating
portions.
Yeah. Instead of eating three giant meals a day, I'll have a small breakfast. I'll do like a protein shake. Lunch, I'll do like a protein bar or maybe a couple beef sticks, and then I'll have a normal dinner. But when I first started out, I did everything wrong. Everything that you're not supposed to do, I did basically. I starved myself. When I first started out, I ate maybe 300 calories a day, and I was running close to 3 miles, burning around 1,500 calories a day and only consuming around 300. I did that for probably the first month until my body just absolutely shut down. I'd barely have enough energy to crawl out of bed to go brush teeth, and then I'd basically crawl back in bed. And from that point, I knew I needed to do something different. And so that's when I changed to, okay, let's do a protein drink in the morning. Let's do more protein, more fiber for lunch, and then a normal dinner while still doing the same workouts. That's the food I'm doing now, and I've been able to maintain my weight where I'm at right now. For the actual working outside, I've always wanted to lift weights. I've always wanted to not be one of those guys that's so big you can't scratch your back, but I also wanted to be able to tell that I had muscle and stuff. But I knew I needed to lose weight first before I started pumping out a bunch of iron. So I just hit the treadmill. I mean, I was running. I was getting up every morning. It started out, I could barely run a mile, and then a mile turned into a mile and a half, and then it turned into 2 miles, and then now I can run like 5Ks every day. I can just go out and run a 5K on a treadmill. I'd get up early in the morning, get all my running out, because then to me at least, I saw more results with weight loss if I worked out in the morning than I did with night. It seems like, I don't know if it's, there's probably some science behind it, but if I work out at nights, it's perfect for maintaining what I'm at. But if I work outs in the, if I do my runnings and stuff in the mornings, the weight starts dropping like crazy doing the runnings and then the protein drinks and stuff. So I started working out, getting up super early in the morning. I'd read a little bit of books. I bought a bunch of David Goggins books. He's wrote quite a few books of motivation, and I just read his books. And
have you read the second one?
Oh, I'm like halfway through it, and I need to finish it. It's just as good as the first one.
Yeah, I like the first one, but the second one, I didn't think the second one would be as good as the first one, just because it's like the first one's like awesome, but the second one I thought was really good. Yeah.
Yeah, the first one's how he did it. Yeah, and the second one, I'm like, oh, it's just him maintaining the same stuff. But it's really good. I definitely recommend both of them. But yeah, I got out of the running habit. I need to get back into it. I think starting on...
It's tough too when it's cold out.
Oh, yeah. It hit... I was solid until it hit 40s outside. And then you wake up and the house would be cold, and it's cold that you don't want to get out of the covers when you wake up in the morning. And that just sucked all motivation for working out of me. And now that we're getting back in the spring, I'm like, oh, I'm starting to itch to get back outside to start running and stuff. So I think it looks like here, at least on Monday, the weather's supposed to be really nice. I think I'm going to get back on the grind of just not going crazy like I did. Just
2 miles, whatever.
Yeah, just start out, even if it's just a mile a day or whatever. But yeah, just doing those workouts, eating healthy foods, getting a sponsor with the new health company, First Form. I don't know if you ever heard of them or not, but they're a big...
All right, I didn't hear about them until I saw your post.
They're a big health industry and trying to get people to get outside more instead of yeah, they're about lifting weights, but they're also more about just getting active in any possible way. If that's getting up and reading a book, or if that's just going on a walk, or whatever it may be. And so they heard about my story and stuff, and they were willing to jump aboard and help support me. So I have all kinds of, like, behind my computer right now is just a wall high stack of different protein flavors and protein shakes, but that's what I use every morning and stuff. I just use.
What are some flavors that are your favorite as far as, you know, for the protein shakes or bars or, you know, whatever?
So my absolute, I got a couple favorites. They have energy drinks. I'm not usually a big energy drink kind of guy, like Monsters and stuff. I can never drink because they're not the greatest taste, but you get the mass sugar crash.
Yeah.
And you would tank in an hour. And I always hated that. Whereas with their energy drinks, it's more of natural caffeine from, I believe, green tea is where they get all their caffeine from. So it lasts throughout the entire day and there is no crash. I think there's most cans are 0 calories. Some are 10 calories a can, and they're monster sized cans and they taste wonderful. There's a cherry lime that tastes exactly like cherry. There's a blue raspberry that to me tastes a perfect mixture of blueberries and raspberries. Those are probably my top two favorite drinks on them. They make beef sticks, protein beef sticks that I think are 20 grams of protein per steak. And oh, they're so good. They're so good. And they're a decent size enough that they could be your lunch.
Oh, wow.
They're really big and they're really good. I love their jalapeno.
So healthier than a Slim Jim.
Oh, yeah. Way healthier than a Slim Jim. And they don't have that slimy. Like, I love Slim Jims, don't get me wrong, but they have that slimy grease that will upset me in a half an hour after I eat some of them.
Yep.
These ones don't. They have a barbecue flavor that tastes just like a Kansas City barbecue restaurant. They have, and then my second favorite is probably a jalapeno, a cheddar jalapeno, but that one does have spice. So if you don't like spice, avoid that one because that one does kick you. My third favorite thing is probably their protein bars. They have a cookie dough flavor. I'm a sucker for cookie dough. I love cookie dough everything. It tastes identical to cookie dough. It's like you're eating raw cookie dough out of the freezer. It's so good, and it's got a crunchy type covered in chocolate. They're really good, really healthy for you. I've been doing a lot of those. I carry those.
How many grams of protein do those have?
They have 20 grams of protein. A lot of their stuff is 20 grams. Like, their protein sticks are 20 grams. Their protein bars are 20 grams. Their energy.
That's a good amount.
Oh, they're absolutely filled with protein. And that's why I like them so much, because I've been lacking my protein intake. It seems like trying to get food protein in is a lot harder than if it's a little bitty snack that has mass amounts of protein in it. And then my last thing is my breakfast shakes that I have. It's a chocolate marshmallow flavor, and it tastes like I'm drinking a s'more. And it's so wonderful. It's a s'more in your mouth, but melting in liquid form. And I think one scoop of their powder, I think it's 23 grams of protein and some. So it's like, again, they go above and beyond on their protein amount, and it's just a great company in and out. I'm not meaning to like plug them in or anything, but I like them personally, and I'm a big taste guy where if something tastes slightly off or gives me a slight aftertaste, I'm 100% out.
Yeah.
I'm either all in or I'm all out. And there's not a lot that offers everything that's really good. And so after I found heard about First Form, I immediately fell in love with him.
And a lot of that stuff, like you'll drink it and you'll get like that powdery like aftertaste.
Oh, the aftertaste tastes so bad. Yeah, not with this stuff. Like aftertaste for me is probably my biggest thing. That I don't like a lot of foods just because of the aftertaste. Or there's a lot of energy drinks or protein drinks or protein bars or basically any healthy thing leaves a bad aftertaste in your mouth. And these, I haven't had anything yet that's given me a, oh man, that was, I'm tasting that hours afterwards. That's horrible. Not with these ones, at least. I carried them all around Texas at Nationals and stuff. I filled my suitcase up, my carry-on full of beef sticks and their protein bars just to have as snacks or lunches and stuff, just to stay energized for shooting.
Now, do you have like a link? Like if people listening wanted to try, you know, a beef stick or energy drink or whatever, do you have a link that they could use and help support you?
Yes, I do have a link. I can
put it in the description.
Okay, yeah. I have a link through my account that when you click on it, it will bring up the main page to the First Form website. And then I believe in the top left there's a little shop icon. They can click on shop and it's got a full list of all their products. They have t-shirts, they got weighted vest to all of their protein drinks, weight loss supplements, basically anything you can think of healthy, they have. So like I always go to that shop and I always immediately look for their energy drinks, their protein sticks, their protein bars, and their protein shakes.
Yeah.
Those are like the main things. And then if you order them and you don't like them, they give you 110% back. So they'll, you get it, if you don't like it within 30 days, you can try it, open it up. If you don't like it, you send it back to them, they'll refund you, and then they'll also refund you another 10% to include shipping.
Mm-hmm.
So it's basically you can try anything for free. If you don't like it, they'll give you everything back, which a lot of companies don't necessarily, especially with food products. They're, if you open it, it's kind of tough love on it, but they're really nice. Their customer service is amazing. Anytime you buy something, you'll get a handwritten note thanking you for your support to their company and stuff from a different member in corporate.
Well, I mean, I just think like when shooting, like at a big shoot and whatnot, my biggest thing is the lack of like healthy choices for snacks. It's like you got like pizza or burgers or hot dogs or whatever, but there's nothing really there unless you bring it yourself.
Exactly.
And you gotta, if you're not camping or, you know, staying in a camper or whatever, it's in your car and your car is going to be hot.
Yeah.
So like beef sticks and protein bars and stuff might be a good option for people to take two shoots, you know, in between hundreds, you eat a quick snack, get the calories back in you, and then you're ready to go for the next round. So I think that would be a good option if people wanted to try that.
Yeah. And it's like, that's the first place I saw First Form was actually at a shoot. They were showcasing all of their energy drinks. They're like, would you like an energy drink to try one of my? I was like, no, thank you. They give me really bad crashes or whatever. And then the dude was super nice that was manning. The dude manning the station was super nice. And he just went on to say, like, oh, ours don't do that. Ours is all natural caffeine. Ours is all And then you start looking at the can, looking at the ingredients. And it's like, wow, there's one carb in this monster size can. There's no calories, there's like no sugar, like holy cow, this thing is, then you're trying it, it's like, oh my gosh, this thing is amazing. And then from then I immediately started, because I've never heard of them before, like you said, I've never even heard of the company until I just happened to see a small vendor at a sporting clay shoot just giving out free samples of energy drinks and stuff, and I'm glad I found them.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. A couple more questions here for you, and I'll let you go. What is one thing that sets you apart from everyone else that makes you so successful in the shooting game. If you had to pick one thing.
That's such a good question.
And I can't take credit for it. It was sent to me from Tyler Buchanan.
Oh, Tyler, yeah. Oh, let's see. I can't really say the thing that separates me is my strive and my motivation, because it seems like every top shooter out there in the country wants it just as bad as I do. What I would say separates me from everyone else is the strive and motivation to give back. Like, I want other people to succeed more than what I do, if that makes sense. Like, my whole purpose to get into this sport, I believe, is that God put me in this sport so I can help other people achieve their dreams and achieve their goals that they didn't think was even possible. But giving my knowledge that I've learned from people throughout the country and what I've learned over my years and being able to turn around and just give them everything I know so they have all the knowledge and all the abilities is what helps me shoot the way I shoot. Like, it gives me motivation to get back out there in the pouring rain or freezing cold shoot or blazing hot grand. To me, that gives me motivation to get back out there and continue to be and perform the best that I possibly can. That way I can show younger people, younger generations, or even older people that anything's possible, that if you put your mind to it, you can do just as well.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping that answering the question in the full sense, it makes sense in my mind. I'm hoping it answered.
No, I don't think there's a right or wrong answer there.
There's so many different ways somebody can go with this. That honestly may be the best question I think I've ever heard in anything.
Well, maybe I should take credit for it then.
No, you may start from just say, and then copyright,
yeah,
put your name on it.
Going into you enjoying the aspect of helping others improve, do you see yourself potentially maybe doing that with Simpson in the future as like a assistant coach or anything like that?
So my ultimate goal ever since I started shooting was I've always wanted to be a coach. I've always wanted to help the next person in line. And now that my time at Simpson is done, I would love to be able to come back and help, even if it was just occasional practice or if I could show up on competitions and just help around or eventually do a assistant coach or full-time coaching job at anywhere. I would be thrilled and absolutely honored to be able to do that. Getting a house in Indianola, still being so close to Simpson, worst case, worst, I still plan on going to every competition as a spectator and still just supporting the team, because even though I'm not a part of it, I'm still a Simpson shooting member for life. Like, that's my family. And so I'm going to be there for them always. I'm not going to just walk out on them because I'm done with my time at my college career. I'm still there for them. But ultimately, whether it's with the school or not, if it's doing private lessons, personal lessons, just going, helping, traveling around the different high school practices or just anything like that, I want to, starting this summer, trying to help out as many people as I possibly can through coaching.
I mean, it would make sense to do something with Simpson. You're probably the most decorated shooter from the college.
Yeah, I don't like tooting my own horn. I don't like being sounding selfish, but I have been the highest succeeding member on the team. At this point, I hope there's somebody in the future that does excel what I've done. I would love to do that. But up to this point, I think I've been the best what they've had so far.
I mean, I think you've set the bar pretty high.
I definitely didn't make it easy for the next person in line, but
not impossible, but it's up there.
It's nothing's impossible. I mean, you can win four national titles a year in college, and I've got 8 in my 4 years. So, I mean, until somebody gets 16, there's always a chance. Going to be pretty much impossible to get all 16, but it can theoretically happen.
Last question here for you, and on the same kind of college note, what would be your best advice? Let's say there's like a junior in high school out there listening, sophomore, whatever, and they're looking into choosing a college. What would be your best advice for them as far as making that decision?
Hands down, the best advice that I have, and I will always stick by this, is never let somebody else decide your decision for you when it comes to college or anything big in life in that sense, but more specifically college. You're going to spend the next 4 years of your life with those people on the team, with that school, with those professors. If your entire family loves school, but you do not like it, you're not going to do well there. You're going to college ultimately for your education, and you're going there to better off your future career. So make sure you choose what you and what you alone want the best, I guess. That's the one thing I wish I had somebody my age tell me when I was still in high school, because there were so many coaches that were lying, telling me anything I wanted to hear to get me to go shoot for them or go compete for their teams. They were just trying to get me there. And being able to have somebody to tell me, do what you want, because in the end of the day, you're only going to compete in college for 4 years. I would rather go to a college with a team that may not be national competitors every single year, but get an outstanding education that I can use for the rest of my life, instead of going to a top name school, winning a couple titles, and then that's it. You're kind of out of luck with a good degree or a good lifestyle. So to me, that's the biggest thing I can possibly tell anyone, is to make sure whatever decision you choose is because you want to do it. If you love that school, great, stick with it. If you don't, but everyone else does, weigh your other options. Make the choice for yourself.
Cool. Well, thank you, Braden, for joining us today. Always a pleasure talking to you.
Yeah, it was an honor to be back here.
Looking forward to seeing you out at a shoot this year. And close us out with, and if there's anyone you want to give a shout out to, feel free to do so.
I'd love to give a shout out to my mom and my dad. Thank you guys for everything that you've always done for me and you always will do. And shout out to my forever coach, Dan Martin, and Trenton Cheers. The two of you guys have taught me everything that I possibly know. And without you guys, I wouldn't be anything I was today.
Before we close it out for the week, I want to thank my sponsors for supporting me here. Fiocchi Ammunition. Do yourself a favor and try some Shooting Dynamics or White Rhinos. Some of the best shooters in the game today shoot Fiocchi. Everybody's favorite gun dealer, Michael Gooch with the Indiana Gun Club. Stop in and check out his inventory at a shoot. Michael travels all over the Midwest and East Coast while providing top-notch service. AJ Supplies, they've been with us since day one. Be sure to reach out to AJ Supplies for all your reloading needs by calling 419-583-7133. Diamond 8 Leather. Randall creates quality leather gear for shooting enthusiasts. Visit d8leather.com for samples of his craftsmanship. Chet Harrod with Harrod Insurance. They've been servicing Ohio for 3 generations. Chet can be reached at 419-303-2218 or visit harrodinsurance.com. Shamrock Sporting Arms. Jonathan travels all over the Northeast providing shooters with Pila glasses, Krieghoff accessories, and ammunition. Visit shamrocksportingarms.com for more info. Ezok CLP and Gun Care Solution, providing the best cleaning, dry lubrication, long-lasting corrosion protection, and leaves your shotgun looking brand new. Visit ezox.com for more info. Last but certainly not least, visit trapshootersunited.com. Orders here help support the show. I have Pila and Ranger shooting glasses. Trap Shooters United shirts, hats, visors. Go ahead and get your swag on for the next shoot. I also have a shooting journal that can be purchased on Amazon. This is a low-cost but extremely beneficial tool that's great for all competitive shooters, regardless of discipline. Keep notes from each shoot, ranging from a practice session to the World Championships.
That's a wrap on this episode of the Trap Shooters United podcast. Thank you all for listening. Your support is greatly appreciated. See you all out on the trap line.